Good evening and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, as always, joined by my co-host, Roberto Rojas, and special guest, Mr. Carl Warswick, from contributor for World Soccer Magazine and The Guardian, as we break down Los Cafeteros Colombia in their 2018 World Cup journey. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me tonight. Carl, I want to start out with you, and I'd like to ask you, what's your particular connection to the country of Colombia, the national team, the players? Give us a little bit more on your background.
Hello, thanks for having me on. Good evening. And yeah, I've lived in Colombia for about 6-7 years now. I first arrived here in 2007. I was covering the Copa America in Venezuela, actually, for a British newspaper. And I had a bit of time to hop over the border for a few days. So Colombia lose 5-0. But something stuck. I came back the next year and did a bit of a tour around, decided I liked it, wanted a break from my job writing about things I wasn't interested in England. And yeah, then I told my girlfriend I was going to go and live in Colombia for a year. We didn't last very long after that. And yeah, that year turned into 7 years and I've no real plans to go back. And yeah, for the last 5-6 years, I've been writing exclusively about Colombian football. I was in Brazil for the World Cup, Chile for the Copa America, and I went to most of the home World Cup qualifiers, so I guess that's my loose connection to Colombian football.
You know, it's funny. I guess for myself and Joe, I mean, we have always had a connection. There's always there's a huge Colombian community here in the United States. I think we've always felt the connection that Colombia has had for the sport of football. I think in 2014, where you went into Brazil, that was made clear. I mean, and we're going to talk about history real quick. Obviously, this will be Colombia's sixth appearance in a FIFA World Cup. Their first time was in 1962 in Chile, where they finished in the group stage. Followed back to the golden years of the 90s with players like Asprilla, Rincon, Valderrama. Finished up in the round of 16 in Italian 90. 1994, where the great Pele put Colombia as one of the favorites to win the whole thing, bounced back out of a terrible World Cup here in the United States, which ultimately also, for unfortunate reasons, caused the death of Andres Escobar back in Colombia. 1998, I think, Carl, you obviously probably remember this game as an Englishman playing against England in Colombia, the game in France. They also bounced out of the group stage as well. And then it took nearly 16 years for their next World Cup, and obviously their best generation of the Colombian players, where they finished into the quarterfinals, you know, losing to Brazil in that dramatic quarterfinal matchup, and made a star of players like James Rodriguez. So Carl, obviously you've lived in Colombia now for a long time now. You know, what do you think is the sensation that you got, I guess, from the Colombian people to now go back to a second consecutive World Cup for the first time since that golden generation of the 90s? You know, what's the vibe like over there in Bogota, is where I'm assuming you live?
Well, I think it's a lot different to 4 years ago, because 4 years ago they spent 16 years without going to a World Cup. And and during that time, it was quite a difficult moment for Colombia, not just for Colombian football, but for Colombian society as a whole. So there was huge euphoria about being back at football's top table and a chance to sort of show the world that Colombia wasn't just war and drugs and terrorism and bombs and all the negative things that you hear. When I go back to England, I hear those jokes from friends and how do you bring me some Colombian products over. But it completely changed with that World Cup, I think partly because of the way Colombia played. They won the Fair Play Prize, which was also a testament to Peckerman's influence in making sure that this was the most focused team. And that really is key, because in those previous golden generations, focus was probably their undoing. That the country has ever had, and the way they swept aside their opponents, and James's impact really changed people's perception. I remember afterwards, my mum sent me a text message saying, and my mum doesn't know anything about football, she sent me a text message saying, Colombia are good. Colombia spelled with a U, are good. I like that James guy. And this is just something that I couldn't get my head around because my mum had never shown any interest in football whatsoever, and yet she was even clued into who James was. So this time is a little bit different, okay, because the expectations are a bit higher. And a little, I guess we're going to get into this very soon, but also I think the word is inconsistent, an unconvincing manner in which Colombia qualified for this tournament has meant that people still expect Colombia to get out the group stage, but I think expectation is a little bit less this time around. So I'm sure that once the tournament kicks in and the whole country will swing into World Cup fever as it was 4 years ago, but I don't think people are expecting to be challenging for the trophy. Whereas as the tournament went on last time, 4 years ago, there was that distinct feeling that, wow, this is Brazil's worst ever team, this is Colombia's best ever team. We couldn't actually have a shot at this. So, that's the situation with 6 months to go.
No, of course. And I remember those times 4 years ago, you know, when obviously we have a big Brazilian community where I live in Connecticut as well, that, it was division and that there was that feeling from Colombia that, wow, we can do this. We can actually win the whole thing in Brazil's backyard. So that was just incredible to see and really a testament of how well this Colombia side played, I think, 4 years ago. But of course, I think the big question here, and I'm answering a follow-up here, I mean, you know, we've seen over the years the style and the attractiveness that Colombia has had. I think for those who maybe aren't familiar with Colombia, perhaps haven't watched many of the qualifiers or watching a bit of highlights on YouTube videos as well. You mean, and I'm asking you this, Carl, what do you think stands out for this Colombia team that, you know, makes it so special to watch many people should look out for in this World Cup?
I'm not sure if I would describe them as special this time. I mean, since the World Cup 2014, historic finish, last eight, slightly unlucky with some refereeing decisions in that game against Brazil. You felt that Colombia were going to push on. They had this sort of a lot of young players coming through as well, but they never really have done. And I mean, analysing those 18 today, I sat down, I looked through all the 18 games and everyone I watched, quite a few of them live. There, besides perhaps the two games against Ecuador, I don't think there was a game where Colombia were particularly impressive, or they'd lost that sort of swashbuckling, possession-based football that they became known for in Brazil and through the last qualifiers under Peckerman. And it's slightly curious. I mean, there are many reasons that we can look into as to why this happened. But Peckerman really did struggle in sort of regenerating the team. They lost captain Mario Jepes, who was making his World Cup debut in Brazil, 38 years old. And they lost Farid Mondragon, who was the third goalkeeper, but he sort of bridged. He was the one who, you mentioned, the game against England in 1998. He was the goalkeeper. He broke down in tears afterwards. And I think it was David Beckham put his arm around him. But he was a massive influence in the changing room. And suddenly after 2014, a lot of players went out of form. And Peckerman has always viewed his selections as, well, form is temporary. So I'm willing to ignore that. And I'm going to stick with some of the old guns. But by 2015, the Copa America in Chile, where Colombia were absolutely dreadful, they scored one goal in four games and should have gone on in the group stage. I mean, his loyalty to these players who weren't getting minutes at their club teams and looked just completely out of shape and out of form had started to, I think for the first time really, annoy and get the media and fans on his back, and people started to question whether there should be another change in direction and that they should bring in another manager. So it's special, no, but there is potential there. I would say that James still has been the star player throughout qualifying. He's had six, and he scored six goals and four assists, and he's at the centre of pretty much everything Colombia do going forward. He's given more or less a free reign to wander across just behind the striker. Even when he was struggling at Real and not getting games under Zidane and Benitez, he was still captain armband on, dictating play for Colombia. And now with him hitting form for Bayern Munich, you suspect that he could again continue his form from 4 years ago. Falcao only recently has, well, in terms of the qualifying, it was only in the last stage of the qualifying, has hit a incredible streak. And who would have thought, having watched him at Man United and Chelsea, that he could bounce back in such style? And he again could become a great player. And the defence has not really been a problem, but there are still more questions than answers, I think, about Colombia. I mean, Beckerman has used, I think it's 57 players he's called up in these qualifiers. It's a hell of a lot of players. And I don't think he even knows his starting 11. Right now, he's been chopping and changing his formation. So, and then, of course, what happened last week with Edwin Cardona and Wilmer Barrios, Frank Fabra in the scandal at Boca, has cast further doubts over whether are they even going to be on the plane and to Russia. So I think with 6 months to go, it's again a little bit soon to be talking about Colombia as being special, as you said. But I think there is huge potential for them to do something like they did 4 years ago in Brazil.
Sure. You know, I'm going to jump in here because I want to go back and look at their qualification. Obviously, they finished fourth in CONMEBOL, 1 point ahead of Peru. There's a famous video that I think was disproven at this point where they saw Radamel Falcao having a discussion with the Peruvian players, trying to make a deal, saying that if they draw, they both go through. I believe that's kind of been wiped out at this point. We've had James Rodriguez finishing tied for sixth with 6 goals among top goal scorers. Carlos Bacca was second on the team with 3 goals. And this team only scored 21 goals in 18 games. Not the greatest of records when we looked at somebody like Brazil who scored 41 goals. What does Colombia have to do, really, to change that goal scoring, especially go back to that high-flying attacking style that they used to have?
Yeah, like you said, 4 years ago in Brazil, they were known for that free-flowing football. They had a clear identity of what they wanted to do. It was possession-based. Fast, it had the wingers pushing, the wing-backs pushing up, and sometimes you'd have 5-6 men in attack. You had Falcao, who was in great form throughout the qualifiers, but then suffered that horrible injury, but Colombia bounced back and they coped. But since then, they don't think Peckerman really has found a way of fixing some fundamental flaws in their game. And one of the problems has been the wing backs. After the World Cup, where they had Camilo Zuniga and they had Pablo Armero, both of them fell out of form. And he like I said before, he stuck with them, but it became evident he did, which altered the balance of the team. And in midfield, Carlos Sanchez, who, I mean, I'm an Aston Villa fan, he was absolutely dreadful in his time in England, but he's such a fundamental player in shielding the defence. But he needs someone alongside him who can knit play. And Peckerman has gone through 11 midfielders in that sort of mould, and he still hasn't decided upon anyone. He's gone back to Abel Aguilar, whose best days are clearly well over. And he finished the qualifiers as the in the first team and mid-table choice. So I think this is almost a recognition of, well, first and foremost, we're going to push across, we're going to get ourselves across the line, and then we're going to address some of the issues. But in so many of those games, Colombia were either functional in some of their away victories or at home, they were just downright disappointing. I think the amazing change has been that Colombia have been transformed into a team who are a better counter-attacking. They don't really know what to do with the ball. There was one very, very low moment. It was against Bolivia at home. Bolivia at home, they'd beaten 5-0 in the previous qualifiers, and Bolivia were already out. They sent what was essentially a C team, and it took Colombia almost the entire game to break them down, and they won 1-0 in 18 games, which is a striking, and it wasn't meant to be a pun, but it's a terrible statistic to look at. James is again the player who's sort of grabbing the team, and I think he had the third most amount of shots in the entire qualifiers. Carlos Bacca, he was originally the number one striker while Falcao was going through his difficult moments. But he, again, fell out of form. And there was a game against Venezuela where he missed many, many chances. And Beckerman finally lost patience with him. But and there hasn't really been any young players who've come through. Miguel Borja came through and he was playing really well for Atletico Nacional. Then he moved to Palmeiras in Brazil and his form slumped. So, I mean, this is always the problem with international football, that regularity. But if Beckerman doesn't know his starting 11 and if he doesn't know his best formation, then it's very hard to sort of forge an identity. And that's one of the ways that Colombia struggles so much in these qualifiers. And that lack of a positive identity has often left, I mean, when I've been at the home qualifiers, sometimes James is... he's shouting at his teammates. That sort of joie de vivre that Colombia became known for has disappeared a little bit, and it's become more that the fans get on their back and the frustration mounts. And it's been a little bit disappointed. I think everyone would agree.
Now, I'm going to jump in real quick and talk about the nitty-gritty. Obviously, it's the group that Colombia have been in. Obviously, I think we look at the groups real quick. They'll be taking on Japan once again, like they did 4 years ago in the opening game on the 19th. Then they followed that against Poland, a really strong Poland side led by Robert Lewandowski on the 24th. And then they finish it off with a really talented African side that really, you know, I think for a lot of people who didn't watch it, you know, I really starting to prove to themselves that they could be a big underdog in this World Cup. And Joe, I'll jump to you real quick. I mean, alluding everything that Carl has said, real quick, you mean, do you feel that there's probably this danger that, you know, Colombia could, maybe they peak too much and they could really fail into this group, being an even group in itself? What is your take on that? And also, of course, these are three important games for Colombia in itself. I mean, which one would you view as the toughest and perhaps the most important one?
Well, let's take the first part. This is a very, very tricky group, this group H here, with Senegal, Poland, and Japan in there. All three teams are experienced. All three teams present their own sets of problems, and it's difficult. I think Colombia does have the quality to manage this group. I do think they have the quality to advance in this group. For me, looking at the matches, when we talk about the first match for them against Japan on June 19th, they follow up with Poland on the 24th, and then they close with Senegal on the 28th. This is a tough question. It's multi-tiered. I think in this, because this is, you could view this as a group of death because it's very, very difficult. I think all three teams are equally important. I think they need to get out on the good foot against Japan. They need to establish a two-goal win or something like that. Really kind of set their foot down as we're going to be one of the dominant teams in this group. They need to make a statement there because the next match against Poland is going to be very difficult. You're going to need to see if you can contain Robert Lewandowski. They've got some excellent defenders on that Polish team. So there's a lot of moving parts there that I think if they can manage a draw, I think that Senegal-Colombia match is going to be the ultimate key for them because I think that's going to be the team that they're going to battle with to challenge to get out of this group. And the Senegal team does offer a multitude of issues. They're a very good attacking side. And I think you're going to need to be up to that challenge defensively and in terms of possession. They're going to be relying on that midfield. They're going to be relying on James to be able to counter with somebody like maybe Teofilo Gutierrez or even if he's on the team, Carlos Bacca, maybe utilizing the wings like Juan Cuadrado to really transition that attack against Senegal and kind of take that strength to them. So they each match has its own key component. And I think this is kind of the first team, Rob, that we've looked at that – we don't have one match that we can point to and say, yeah, that's the key to this group for them. All three of these matches really pose their own set of problems in the way they come at them. So, Carl, I want to throw that question over to you because, I mean, do you see it a little differently or do you see it where this is a very difficult river or sea to navigate for Colombia?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's probably the – oh, I'm getting some feedback here. Yeah. I don't know what's happened there. Yeah, no, I think it's the most even group out of all of them. And before a ball has been kicked, I think you could probably make a case for any two of the four to get to go through. Each, and what's the most fascinating part of it is that every single country has their own sort of style, which is a little bit like 4 years ago in Colombia's group with Ivory Coast, Greece, and Japan. Again, is the same. I understand that Japan have had a bit of a transition; they're a bit more of a counter-attacking team these days. But I still think that all four countries have their unique way of playing. I would probably say that the first game is most important for Colombia, just because, I mean, in all the time I've been here and I've been talking to coaches and managers and players and ex-players, all of them have kind of said the same thing. And I was with Osorio a few years ago doing an article, and he said the biggest problem for him, for Colombia players, is the mental aspect. They have technique and skill and to die for most of the nations. But the problem for Colombians is that psychological aspect. And I think what was key 4 years ago was that when they started at home in Brazil against Greece, they scored after 5 minutes, and that automatically lifted the pressure, and they could go out and enjoy the football. And if Colombia, they'll be up and running. But yeah, with 6 months to go, it is a very tight group. And I'd probably say that if Colombia didn't qualify, it would be a massive disappointment, and Peckerman would be out of the door, and his legacy would be really tainted. But I'd say probably Colombia and perhaps Poland are the favourites to go through at this point. One other thing to mention is that in qualifying, Colombia were very, very ruthless at picking off the weaker teams. So if you look at all their victories, they're all against the teams that didn't qualify, except the first victory at home to Peru, they got quite fortunate in that game as well. So I think if Colombia went with the attitude of, well, we're better than these teams, then they will probably polish them off. The problem comes when they have to play one of the bigger sides. And that's actually one of the things that's been building up in Colombian media over the last few months. And after the last home qualifying game against Paraguay, where Colombia threw away a 1-0 lead and almost their ticket to Russia, one of the journalists asked Peckerman, hey, this has been a common theme throughout your entire managerial stint. You haven't really ever beaten one of the bigger teams. And Peckerman actually said, yeah, I know, that is a worry for us, but first of all, we've got to concentrate on getting to the damn tournament, and then we'll address that issue. So in the entire 5 years that Peckham has been in charge, you could probably point to one win over Brazil, which was the worst Brazil I've ever seen at the Copa America in 2015, and one win against Uruguay at the World Cup when they didn't have Suarez. So I think the problems come for Colombia, not really in the first round. I think they have the quality to see off most teams. I'll probably say two wins and a draw, but it comes when they have to face Belgium or probably England in the second round, which would leave me slightly compromised.
I would certainly agree. Let's jump over to the players to watch now and move away from the group. I want to start but with a rewind 4 years ago, where the big name that jumped out on the scene was James Rodriguez, kid coming over from Monaco, really leading this team to a valiant effort on the 4th of July against Brazil, getting knocked out in the quarterfinals of the World Cup in 2014. We fast forward 4 years later now, and we've got a new name that we can start to hang our hats on. And miraculously, he's from Colombia as well. We had granted he doesn't play a flashy position like James did, but Yerry Mina as a defender making the big move to Barcelona recently could be that next star. Is this his opportunity to really shine, especially given that they have such a difficult group to navigate?
He certainly gives them a little bit extra, no? His danger from attacking positions is, I mean, he's already scored two goals for Colombia. And it's interesting, actually, that he was only brought into the Colombia team, into the first team, because Colombia was struggling so badly in defending crosses and set pieces. And he's a giant. What is he, 195? So, defensively, Colombia don't really have any problems. And he's slotted in there, and he'll probably play alongside Davinson Sanchez of Spurs. Or I'd probably say at this moment, Christian Zapata is more of a likely starter with, but that can change. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose he is the name that a lot of people might not have heard of until recently, until the move to Barcelona. But I remember watching him when he first emerged back in 2013. And in a column I wrote for World Soccer, I picked him out as my young player of the season because he was just so calm and mature for his age. And most people here couldn't believe that he lasted so long in Colombian football and that he didn't go straight to Europe. I think he, of the players that people might not have heard of, he could be a one to watch for. And he might be a cheeky outside bid for a first goal scorer as well, because they do look for him from, and he's almost impossible to mark. He's such a giant, powerful figure, and his heading is fantastic. So anybody who's seen him play knows that a central part in the tactics of any team is to look for Jerry Mina from a set piece.
Okay, I want to run up back up to the strikers. Obviously, we just talked about the lack of goal scoring in qualifying for them. Rob, I'm going to start with you, because the list of players that they have at striker are very, very good, and they play a 4-4-2. So we're going to see two of these names start out. But I was looking back. We talk about Carlos Bacca, Teofilo Gutierrez, Luis Muriel, Radamel Falcao, and even a player like Duván Zapata, who's currently at Sampdoria, who's been really playing well there for them. Who of these strikers actually starts in the 4-4-2 for Jose Pekerman for the World Cup?
Well, I think it's a problem that I think Colombia has had, and I think Carl could agree with me here, is that, you know, I think with strikers, you know, they just don't seem to have like a good established one. I mean, you know, you look at Falcao, who would have thought that he would be back after a poor form with Manchester United and Chelsea? You know, his run of form in Monaco could make him the starting striker. And I mean, I think that would be the perfect, you know, plot for I think his destiny after what happened to him 4 years ago, where he was supposed to really, really lead that team that eventually James had to do in Brazil. So I think this is now his time for revenge, I would say. And in terms of his partner, I mean, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, you know, as Carl said, you know, will we see a good run of form from Borja that we were able to see back in the Copa Libertadores with Atlético Nacional? Will he be back on form? You know, will we see Baca return to form? Or Teo, or Luis Muriel, maybe Jackson Martinez. That's a big shot to think about, but maybe him after his sensational, you know, few seasons with Porto. But, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, if I had to choose one, I would probably pick Borja just because of age and as well, like, of continuity and the style of player that he is. I mean, that's my big guess. And I'll jump it back to you, Carl. I mean, would you agree with me, or do you feel that there's still another name that probably will partner Falcao, or do you even see Falcao starting on this team?
Yeah, no, without a shadow of a doubt, he'll be one of the first names on the team sheet. So when he had that race against time to get fit for the 2014 World Cup, it was understood that Peckerman's had said to him, look, whatever happens, you come in with me. We need you because you're such a professional and you've been such an important part of this team. And he scored 9 goals in that qualifying round, which was a record for a Colombian player. And Falcao turned around and said, you know what, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take away a place when I'm clearly not fit. And so Luis Muriel went instead. And that's something that Pekerman was massively impressed with. So, and his return to form for Monaco, his mental strength is extraordinary. So I think I see him leading the line. And I probably see the situation at this moment is Colombia playing a 4-2-3-1. So Falcao by himself up front, behind, in front of Cardona, if he's picked, that's another question altogether. James in the centre and Cuadrado on the right. But I mean, like I said, throughout qualifying, that's probably the most common formation he's used. But he has also used and the 4-2-2-2, which he and 4-4-2, if you like, when they're not in possession, which they use most often at the World Cup 4 years ago. I mean, if they were to go for two strikers, it's a tough one, I agree, because there isn't a clear candidate. And I mean, this time 4 years ago, there were so many Colombian strikers who were at the top of the game, Carlos Bacca, Jackson Martinez, and they were all queuing up to get into the squad. Jackson Martinez, you were already through, and scored two goals. And this time around, there's almost a dearth of quality up front, and it's almost in reverse in defence. They've got two of the best young defenders in the world at the moment, Damson Sanchez and Jerry Mina, as well as the experience of Christian Zapata. So where do you fit them? You've honestly got an embarrassment of riches. Whereas up front, I like Borja. Yeah, I know he's had a tough time in Brazil for Palmeiras, but I still think it's a little bit hard, it's a bit soon to write him off. He settled quite badly. He joined after the season started, and he really is a confidence player. When he was in Colombia for Santa Fe, his head was down, and nobody thought that he was ever going to be a Colombia quality striker. And then he went through this amazing run for a small team and broke the record for top goal scorer in one season, and then continued that with Nacional and helped them win the Copa Libertadores. So I think if he gets his confidence back, if he has a good run with Palmeiras up in the run-up to the World Cup, he'll be in the squad, and I think he'll offer something a little bit different because his movement is so good. I mean, Duvan Zapata finished the last qualifier, and his strength and hold-up play is again something a bit different. Carlos Bacca, I'm just not convinced. I just think he's past his best, and if he's not scoring, he's very often doing absolutely nothing. So, I mean, it is almost like a light-for-light strike for Falcao, so I can't see Peckerman playing both of them up front. So it would only be if Falcao got injured or suspended that Bacca would come in. But like you said, it's a position up for grabs, and if anyone, it's a bit of form between now and then, Peckerman might have a look at them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's incredible that they have an embarrassment of riches up in the back, but now they don't seem to have that in the front where they used to have that 4 years ago. So it's going to be really interesting to what happens there on. So I'll stick to predictions, obviously, in our next segment. And before I ask this very difficult question to you, Carl, I will ask this one first. And it's about Jose Peckerman. Obviously, you know, I think we've been accustomed to Peckerman for quite some time. You know, at 68 years old, he's already managed Colombia now in his sixth year. We've known him for his time in Argentina as well, in the U20 side. But, I think we could see the end of Peckerman no matter what happens at the at Russia. But also, I think when you're looking at other coaches all around the world who are Colombian or any other managers that are interested for that job, who do you think is a name that you wouldn't be surprised taking out of this job once the tournament is over?
Oh, wow. Boy, for Peckerman, you know, I think there's going to be a name that's going to be hot on everybody's list. And it's going to be a question to see if he wants to leave MLS, and that's going to be Tata Martino. You know, you could see him possibly moving away from MLS, very successful with Atlanta United. And he seems to still keep that tie to South American football. You see the players coming in from South America and playing for Atlanta United. I think that maybe if he wants to jump back into the international scene, that it might be something he would be interested in doing. Carl, I mean, same question to you. Do you see a coach out there that would be the next replacement for Jose Peckerman?
I mean, again, over the last few months, there's been mounting speculation about Peckerman's future. I wonder whether this has also got to do with the fact that Luis Bedoya, who supported him, he was the president of the Colombian Football Federation. He supported him through thick and thin, and he went after him when the qualifiers for the 2014 World Cup started. Now, of course, he's now holed up in some US hotel waiting at a trial for TV money, which I think is going to be decided in March. I think that's the new date. And in came a new president who was never Peckerman's biggest fan. And so I wonder if there are some other factors going on that we might not understand that might influence his position. The one thing that Peckerman is... and has done to transform Colombian football and make it very, very serious is that Peckerman has to have things exactly the way he wants it. And if you don't do that, he'll walk out. And so if he suspects that the Federation are talking to other coaches, or even if they're something so small as lining up friendlies behind his back, or any small detail that he's not consulted upon, he'll draw the line and he'll say, no, end of the cycle. And I've shown that even during his stint with Argentina, he walked because he fell out with Grondona. And so, yeah, he's only interested in long-term projects, and that's why he's been so successful. Now, names to throw out there, for a long, long time, it was either Ronaldo Rueda or Juan Carlos Osorio. But now both of them have got jobs, and it doesn't look like they're going to be going anywhere anytime soon, unless Mexico lose 7-0 again in the World Cup, and that could change. So the leading name right now, in at least in Colombia, is Ricardo Gareca of Peru. So, but again, that depends how Peru do, and I'm sure they'd be massively keen to keep hold of him. Tata Martino, he has been a name linked to Colombia in the past. And another name is Miguel Russo, who's just won the local league here in Colombia with Millonarios. And of course, ever since Colombian football began, its link to Argentinian football has been very strong. So he would be another choice for the job.
No, definitely. A lot of mentions to look out for this next Colombia job. But of course, there's also another name that just came up. I mean, what about a coach like Marcelo Gallardo? I mean, he's also another one that that could be a choice, Carl, isn't he?
Possibly. It's not a name I've heard linked to the job. And I think now a lot of people, I mean, it was something that was going, I mean, it's always the case when if Colombia are playing badly, the knives come out for Peckerman, because he is a very, very difficult man. He shuts out the media completely. He doesn't allow much interaction between fans and players. And other than when Colombia are playing games, nobody knows where he is. He supposedly has an office in North Bogota. He likes to take holidays in Miami. But we don't even know even if he's in the country. So that can be ignored when Colombia are playing well. But when they start to struggle, then I think his stock has diminished a little bit. So, but I think the mood right now is that, come on, we shouldn't be talking about a new manager when we've got the World Cup to deal with, and we should be supporting Peckerman because he's been our most important coach ever, arguably. Well, he certainly achieved more at the World Cup than any other previous coach. And I think part of that is because of the small little details he's looked after, his discipline that he's instilled in Colombian players, which was, an absolute joke during the 90s, and his independence of, I have to do it my way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Peckerman, I mean, I always look at Twitter and I always think to myself, wait, there's like 4 days before for a World Cup qualifier. Why hasn't Colombia announced their squad yet? You know, is there a reason to that, or you just have no idea?
It's a bad joke in Colombia that they have to release the squad at a certain time, and Peckerman will wait till the very last minute before doing it. It's just his way. It's his way of sort of playing games, and he's stubborn. And I guess part of his success has been down to that stubbornness, but it's incredibly frustrating for Colombian media. And I think I sort of understand it, because a lot of people don't know, but Peckham actually played. He finished his career in Colombia in the 70s, and he did his knee. I think he was having his breakfast, and he got up and turned quickly, and that was the end of his career. That's how far medicine has come on. But he understands the whole culture of Colombia and what happened in the 90s. So I think he was really a good choice for Colombia to go after when they started the last World Cup qualifying campaign. And that realization, I mean, those 16 years when Colombia didn't qualify for a World Cup, that realization that chopping and changing your manager every three games is no recipe for success. And keep going back to Matarana because he won something 30 years ago or did something good 30 years ago. I mean, the game's changed and he hasn't kept up. So we can't keep going back to those golden days and talking about 5-0 win against Argentina and Nacional's Copa Libertadores win of 1989. So I think Colombia, Peckerman has massively modernized and the Colombian game and made it a lot more focused, as I said, than ever before.
Definitely. Now, of course, looking at the squad, of course, Colombia are blessed with a lot of depth as well. I mean, is there a name that you wouldn't be surprised not make this team in Russia? I mean, obviously, that's going to be hard enough to pick to pick 30 names, I would say, for Peckerman. But, you know, is there a name that you would not be surprised would not make the plane to Russia?
Just because of the scandal last week, I would probably say Edwin Cardona. So people don't know what happened. He's a player who's long had disciplinary issues. He started off at Nacional, problems there. He gets sent to Santa Fe. He gets kicked out there. He goes to Junior. He gets kicked out there. Drinking, eating, partying. And then he goes back to Nacional. And Osorio told me, he said, jokingly, you should see his contract, the amount of clauses we've got in it. And if he breaks one of those, he's out. And he knows that's the case. So what happens is a few weeks ago in one of Colombia's warm-up friendlies, in a heated moment, and I think the context really is key, quite a few players are arguing and shouting each other over a challenge. And Cardona makes the slanted eye gesture to a Korean player, which earned him a 5-match ban. Now, this five-match ban only applies to friendlies, but still, I'm wondering if Peckerman is thinking, well, if I, you know, try my team out and play him in friendlies, then what right should he have to just walk back into my team and be in the squad? And then, of course, last week it all erupts that while he's in Argentina playing for Boca, one night he's... The details aren't completely clear. There are lots of different versions, but certainly something happened, and between him and Wilmer Barrios, who's also a Colombian midfielder, who would be in the squad if this hadn't happened, and it's alleged that there was some violence against a woman, and it's all been hushed up and it's been settled out of court. But Peckerman, it really is very, very important discipline to him, and how you perform off the pitch is almost as important as how you perform on it. So I think I'd probably say I wouldn't be surprised if Cardona isn't in the list. For players, for just on the field activities, Teo, unfortunately, he was such an important player for Colombia in the last World Cup qualifiers. His link-up play with Falcao, but ever since he's... I think he actually even played more minutes in the last World Cup in Brazil than any other Colombian player. But since then, he's been in and out of the squad. He had a really bad disciplinary problem at Junior last year. We were sending messages to his teammates' girlfriends, which was upsetting them. And yeah, one of them, the junior striker, Roberto Avila, eventually just said, I'm off. I don't want to be in the same changing room as this guy. So I think, yeah, he's been such an important player for Colombia ever since Peckerman came in. But right now speaking, I'm not sure if he would be in the 30-man squad.
Now, Carl, I want to jump in and kind of wrap things up here. And I want to ask you a two-part question. For one, I'd like to ask you what a successful World Cup tournament looks like for Colombia. And two, what would a Colombian World Cup win mean to the country and the people?
Okay, part one. Quarterfinals, I think, would be seen as a big, big achievement. I think if they went out in the second round but gave Belgium or England a game, then I think a lot of people would say, you know what, that was decent. After all the problems we've had, that was decent. And even if Peckerman leaves now, we'll always remember him and he can hold his head high. Anything other than that, I think, yeah, Peckerman wouldn't be able to step back in the country again. I think, yeah, given the relatively easy group they've got, they should make it out. And if they didn't, then it would be a massive disappointment. So probably somewhere between second round and the quarterfinals. The other part two, what would he mean for the country? Well, I wasn't here last at the last World Cup. I was in Brazil, so I kind of missed a little bit of that euphoria of winning their first World Cup qualifying match for World Cup finals match for 16 years. And yeah, Maturana, who I did an interview with recently, he said to me, he says, "You have no idea what it's like to spend every 4 years having to support Argentina and Brazil at the World Cup because you haven't qualified." So, and that's how much it hurts for us Colombians not to be at the World Cup final. So it's, I would probably say, of all things in Colombia, and Colombia is a really, really divided, regionalistic country, one of the things that is the glue that holds Colombia together is the football team. And 4 years ago in Brazil, we saw the just spontaneous eruption of joy when they won that first game. And from speaking to friends, there were people just went out on the streets with bags of flour and started throwing it in other people's faces. It's a cultural thing I don't really get. And out on their motorbikes. And in fact, by game two, there were curfews in some towns in Colombia. So people weren't allowed out on a match day after a certain point because people just drink and get on their motorbikes and crash. And yeah, it's I think it means a hell of a lot to Colombia. Another sort of anecdote that I've picked up recently, I've been doing quite a lot of work with, or going out into former conflict regions and meeting the FARC, the left-wing guerrilla movement, have just signed a historic peace treaty with Colombia after 53 years of war. And some of the stories that they told me of how they used to follow the World Cup while being at war are absolutely incredible. They used to cart a big satellite dish on the back, so they'd have the AK-47 in one hand and grenades in another hand, and on their back they'd have a satellite dish so they could put it up somewhere and watch the World Cup qualifiers. And they said that even the army, during those World Cup qualifiers, they would be able to go out into the open because they knew the army wouldn't attack them because they'd all be watching the Colombia games. So it really is something that spans all class, all race, all regions of the country. And I think if Colombia were to do well or get to the quarterfinals, it would help heal the country in some sort of way, because Colombia is badly needing that process of reconciliation after being divided for so long. So I can't really stress enough the importance of football and the World Cup and the Colombian national team to unite in the country on beyond football.
Absolutely. Carl, I do want to thank you for joining us tonight on the show. We really appreciate you helping us break down the Colombian chances of the 2018 World Cup. So for This Week in Football, from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network, I am your host, Joe Uccello. Thank you both, gentlemen, and good night.